last speaker is John Hembling. He is a doctoral student here at Tulane University of Public Health and Tropical Medicine and works full-time as a technical specialist for monitoring and evaluation. Over 15 years, John has worked in Latin America with Latino migrant communities in the United States on HIV and health-related research and evaluation projects. He's a graduate of Tulane and Northwestern universities and served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Nicaragua.
Good afternoon. This work was completed with my time at Tulane University. I've since moved on. I'm still a student, but I'm not based here in New Orleans. I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to start off by talking a little bit about intimate partner violence. Violence against women by their male intimate partners is now generally seen widely as a global health problem. There's strong information around the globe to show links between intimate partner violence and poor reproductive health outcomes, HIV risk, suicidal ideation. And we see that in Latin America, the rates of and the prevalence of intimate partner violence, physical or sexual, is rather high. So we have Bolivia, and among a sample of ever-married women in Bolivia, at least a quarter of them have reported either physical or sexual intimate partner violence. And that ranges up to 37.4% of Colombian women who have ever been married. So this is, again, from demographic and health survey data over the last 5-10 years or so. But outside the United States, very little is known about help-seeking behavior for intimate partner violence. I think oftentimes it's because we don't have large enough sample sizes of women who report physical or sexual violence, and so we can't dig into it further. And so we know very little about help-seeking behavior in terms of seeking help from informal networks, such as friends, family, coworkers, employers, or from more formal sources, such as legal services and medical services. What we see in the United States is that the theory called survivor theory, which holds that women employ a multitude of both private strategies and public strategies to deal with intimate partner violence, holds up. And we see that, for example, severity of intimate partner violence that is experienced is positively associated with both formal help-seeking and informal help-seeking. And when you look into the literature as well, we see in the U.S. primarily that also consequences and the severity of the consequences of the survivor's physical health as well as mental health has been associated primarily and positively with seeking help from formal sources as well as informal sources. Sociodemographic factors that are associated with help-seeking haven't really been consistent in the literature. So you'll see socioeconomic status going all over the place when you look at studies and how they're measuring it. So we don't have a good sense of what sociodemographic factors are consistently associated with seeking more formal or informal sources, one of which may be age of first marriage, and that's the factor that I chose to explore in depth with this analysis. So let's talk a little bit about child marriage in general. So child marriage, as defined by the United Nations and UNICEF, is marriage, formal marriage or informal union before the age of 18. And so there's a lot of different ranges. We were talking earlier about this in there, but the definition that UNICEF has put out and that is currently being used is before the age of 18. And this is primarily an issue for girls. They're greater or disproportionately affected by child marriage. And primarily in South Asia and in Sub-Saharan Africa. But I'll show you some figures from Colombia that surprised me when I dug into the data that says that this is a problem not just in those two areas. Child marriage itself has been shown in the literature to have many negative consequences for the girls who marry before the age of 18. So we see issues with poor reproductive health outcomes, a greater risk for HIV, greater risk for intimate partner violence itself. And then there's a strong set of literature to show that early marriage or child marriage is associated with social isolation of these women. So you'll see that child marriage is associated with smaller social networks. It's associated with limited access to modern forms of communication and media. it's associated with lower mobility, as well as limited access to reproductive health services and maternal and child health services. Looking into the demographic and health survey from Columbia in 2010, we see that 23% of all women 20 to 24 years old married before the age of 18. When you just look at women who are ever married, intimate partner violence is positively associated with child marriage, both sexual and physical intimate partner violence. So let's talk about the data that I used for my examination of the role or the influence of child marriage on help seeking. I used the 2010 Columbia Demographic and Health Survey. This is a publicly available data set, so it's a secondary analysis. The Columbia DHS applied the individual questionnaire to 49,818 women aged 15 to 49. So this is one of the main reasons why I use this data set. The domestic violence module of the Demographic and Health Survey was applied to 35,123 women who were ever in a union, either formal or informal. And to look at help-seeking behavior, I restricted this analysis to 7,655 women who reported either physical or sexual intimate partner violence only. So we're looking at survivors of intimate partner violence in this kind of cascade of the sample. So I had a lot to work with here in terms of data. You usually don't get this large of a sample size of survivors of intimate partner violence, even with a demographic and health survey, which is usually a large sample to begin with. So let's talk about a few of the measures that I used. So I had two dichotomous outcome variables or dependent variables. Informal help seeking, which is a binary variable, yes or no, looking at whether or not women sought help from parents, other relatives, friends, neighbors, or their employers. I also had formal help seeking as a separate dependent variable, and that was access or accessing legal or medical services as a result of intimate partner violence. Women were asked whether or not they had experienced different types of physical or sexual partner violence, as it's a modified version of the conflict tactics scale that the demographic and health surveys use all over the place. And then they're asked if they do report physical or sexual violence, they are asked what did they do in response. So you could have done nothing or you could have sought help from many different types of services. So that's how these variables were constructed. Age at first marriage is a categorical variable, and I chose three categories to look at developmental stages and to get at the definition that the UNICEF uses for child marriage. So I had three categories, whether the age at first marriage was less than 15 years, 15 to 17 years, or 18 and older. Other independent variables that I used and I controlled for, and I'll report on some of them, include whether or not they experience physical, severe physical intimate partner violence, and this is defined by the WHO, and I can list that out if you have questions about it later. Whether or not they experience sexual intimate partner violence, emotional or psychological intimate partner violence, the IPV-related consequences to their physical health, to their mental health, and then sociodemographic variables. I conducted the analysis using Stata SE version 12, and I used the SVY commands to adjust the data for the weighting that's necessary for demographic and health surveys and the type of sampling that they use. And I ran two multivariate logistic regression models to examine the factors associated with help seeking, one for informal, yes or no, and one for formal, yes or no. So here's just some of the descriptive about the IPV experiences of this. Again, these are sample of survivors, right? 7,655 women who experienced either physical and or sexual intimate partner violence. So 45% of them reported severe physical intimate partner violence. A quarter of them reported any sexual intimate partner violence from their partner, from their spouse or partner. 60% reported psychological or emotional intimate partner violence. 57% reported that they had received a physical injury as a result of the intimate partner violence. And 20% or a fifth reported ever contemplating suicide as a result of the violence. And when you're looking at the help, 4 out of 10 approximately sought help from family, friends, or coworkers, colleagues. And just about a quarter sought formal services. terms of age at first marriage, we see that 7% of the women were married between the, less than 15 years of age. 26% of these women, again, these are the survivors, married between 15 and 17, and the remainder married after the age of 18 or older. So after controlling for the other variables that I mentioned and just looking at age at first marriage, in terms of informal help seeking, so seeking help from parents, other relatives, friends, coworkers, employers, the group that was who married at 10 to 14 years of age, so less than 15, there was a negative association between informal help seeking and that age category or marriage category compared to those who married at 18 or older. When you look at formal help seeking, you see that both categories of child marriage had a negative association with formal help seeking compared to the group that was 18 years or older when they married. Some other interesting findings in the data that kind of support some of what we see in the United States. We see that for experiencing any severe intimate partner violence is positively associated with both informal and formal help seeking significantly, as well as if they had any physical injury as a result of the intimate partner violence. But when you look at having experienced sexual intimate partner violence, or reporting having suicidal ideation or contemplating suicide as a result of the intimate partner violence, we see that it's only positively associated with the formal help-seeking, not the informal help-seeking. So again, this was there are certain limitations that we have to couch this in. This was a secondary analysis. I would have asked some of the questions differently if I had the ability to talk to 49,818 women. It was a cross-sectional design, so it prohibits some of our ability to, or our ability to, draw causal relationships. It's self-reported data, so there's a biases associated with that. And importantly, one that I'm going to explain a little bit, again, this is a limitation with the data set itself, is that women who reported both intimate partner violence and physical or sexual violence perpetrated by somebody else other than their intimate partner, so a stranger, a friend, a neighbor, someone who wasn't their partner or spouse, had to be excluded from the data set in order to be able to isolate the help seeking. So women who experienced physical or sexual violence, regardless of perpetrator, were asked about their help seeking behavior. And so if you wanted to know if the help seeking behavior was for the intimate partner violence versus violence from some other person in their life or a stranger potentially, you couldn't distinguish that too from the way that this questionnaire was set up. So in order to look at just and be able to talk about IPV related or intimate partner violence related help seeking, I had to extract about 700 women who experienced both types of violence. Now I looked at demographic characteristics of these two groups, and there were no statistical differences between demographic factors between those two, the 700 women and then the 7,655 women who only experienced physical or sexual IPV. I also stuck the 700 into the multivariate model at one point just to see if the results would be different, and they weren't. The relationships held up as I presented them here. So that says that maybe it's not a horrible thing that we had to take out those seven women. Although, you know, it's important to note that there are cycles of family violence and histories of violence and living in violent communities that have implications as to whether or not, you know, potentially help seeking happens, and so we might be missing some of that. So in conclusion, IPV-related help seeking behaviors seem rather limited in Colombia. We only had 40% of women seeking informal help as well, and I think it was about a quarter of women who sought formal services. What I think we contribute with this analysis is that we have a large sample of IPV survivors, and we're able to look at least one demographic characteristic, in this case, a really important one of child marriage, and we're able to talk about the negative association that child marriage has with help seeking. So we're not just staying at the fact that IPV risk itself is elevated with child marriage, but then we're going beyond that and being able to talk about, well, these women are even more vulnerable potentially because of the social isolation that they face for seeking help in respect as a result of it. So, as many other people have said, and the world organizations are talking about, interventions are needed to prevent child marriage and also to support women who are in these situations already, to build human and social capital of women who have married early, so that, you know, they're empowered to potentially seek help if needed. And additional research, of course, is needed to explore relationships between child marriage, social isolation, and help-seeking behavior.
Do we have any questions?
Parents. Yeah, when you break it up, it was parents, and then in some cases it was also the parents of the partner. So if they were living with, you know, in that situation. I couldn't quote the statistic right now, but that those were the two that were the most important.
And then, do you have any ideas why the level of IUD was so much higher for them once they got married at 18 and older? You were talking about elevated risk with child marriage.
Yeah. Right. So, in that statistic, are we talking about this? So, could you say your question again?
So, do you have any idea why IUD seems to be more common in after marriage?
So, this is of the women. So, of the 7,655 women, this was just the breakdown of child marriage. So, all of these people had experienced IPV. All of these women. 33% or so married before the age of 18. So it's not that, But it's the fact that they're at higher risk for it too, so it's important to target those groups and to realize where these particular girls are more vulnerable to it. So it's not their fault and it's not the cause of it. It's there are other factors that, and it's the abuser. I agree with you. Yeah. And there are very few, at least national data sets, that actually look at perpetration of IPV. And I think that gets at to, again, questions that you can ask in a household survey. The Guatemala DHS, in the male version of it, actually does ask about perpetration. They have perpetration data. And it's one of the few, and I think Bangladesh, or there's a couple of South Asian countries where they actually ask men that. I wrote a paper about perpetration and HIV risk behavior, and I don't know if other people are using that data set particularly. I controlled for the age difference, the gap between the. I don't have the actual statistic about who, you know, what, how that breaks down. It wasn't significant in the model, though.
Okay.
I thought so too. That was one, and in the literature, that age discordance is an important factor for a lot of different things. It didn't hold up in this model.
Thank you very much.
I think there's one more.
There's one question now, Chris.
Unfortunately, they only ask women who sought help, and it was formal services, about the quality of that formal service. So you couldn't apply then that result to all 7,655 women. But yeah, that it would be important. I think that is an important factor, and when you look at some qualitative studies in the U.S., kind of how they'll be received by the helper, it seems to come out as a barrier for help seeking.
Thank you very much. Just to share with you a little bit what John and I were talking about, I did an analysis paper on adolescent reproductive health, and I shared with him when he came in that this is going to be a very hot issue, and the post-2015 development scenario will be the fact that the adolescents, child marriage being one of them, and violence within adolescent relationships, as well as poor reproductive health outcomes, and sort of this combination of factors that child marriage decreases the educational level, which then feeds into some of those things. And we have been focusing mostly on sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, and the fact that it showed up in South America in a middle-income country means that we can't be blasé about anything. But one thing the UN joint statement said is that we need to, first of all, count the young adolescent female and keep some sort of data, because one reason it's not showing up in the data is we don't collect the data, and many of the DHSs don't collect anything on women under the age of 15, and that's why we don't see it. So it's a chicken egg. You don't see it because it's not collected. So you're going to hear a lot more about this in the next 2 years.